have Walter Rojero, who's a pastor, is going to give us a pastoral point of view. His talk is entitled Conducting Meaningful Conversations in Faith and Science.
It's just showing a different graphic. Well, I would like to thank you for making this your last parallel session of the entire conference. My name is Walter Rojero, and the title of the presentation is Conducting Meaningful Conversations in Faith and Science. And as Christians who are involved in faith and science dialogues, we know that we don't always have meaningful conversation when we try to broach the subject. In fact, a lot of our conversations are counterproductive. When we talk about meaningful conversations, what I am referring to is an exchange whereby both sides hear each other and some kind of change is either generated or at least made possible by that interchange. And so for the presentation this morning, I would like to first speak about the subject of contextualization and its importance for creating these kinds of dialogues, then the importance of having relationship and its importance, then move on to three practical steps for actually engaging in this kind of conversation, and hopefully concluding with some of the really interesting questions that are occluded when we do not have meaningful dialogue and are just blossoming when we do. And it's those sorts of questions that I imagine got many of us into this room, into our professions, into what we do. As a young child, I not only had an incredible fashion sense, but I wanted to be a paleontologist. And I wanted to be a paleontologist because somewhere around age 5, I thought paleontologists, they know what's really real and what's really and truly true. And I suppose it's that sort of interest that ended me in seminary much later in life. And there, during my studies in seminary, I was exposed to Dominic Halsper, which many of you probably know, who helped renew my childhood interest in science. And during that time, I also did a master's degree in missions, and I began thinking, well, how do we start having these conversations that are so very difficult, and how does some of this training that I've received help in that conversation? And so later, I did a doctor of ministry, and that fascination both with science and communicating missiological came together in my doctoral project, which was creating for the local congregation a seminar on discussing matters of faith and science without arguing. And as I am part of a very conservative tradition, I've often joked that if I did that seminar just right, I would have been completely unemployable. And so because I was pastoring in the D.C. area, I found out about AAAS's dialogue on science, ethics, and religion, and I kept staring into the windows until they let me be part of the club. And so I found myself hired as the, what is it called, the senior project, senior program associate, and I've lost the terminology, for the Science for Seminaries program, and we'll come back to what that was in just a little bit. And when that was wrapping up, I then, of course, being a pastor and having been a pastor for a long time, was looking for the next thing, and the next thing was a very rural pastorate in Arkansas in a town called Mountain Home. And so that's where I currently am, and that's where I currently have my conversations, and many of those conversations are not necessarily fruitful. Others are. And the question I have for you, can you think of the last really unfruitful conversation you had on matters of faith and science? What would you like to do with that kind of situation? Now, unfortunately, even though we've been through this whole time, even though we've developed these great relationships, even though we have such wonderful information, I hate to tell you, you more than likely will have many, many future meaningless conversations in faith and science. But because you are blowing your last session by listening to me, I assume that you have a desire to have fewer of those meaningless conversations and more of the meaningful conversations. And whether that's because you are just interested in these ideas, or whether you want to help other people, or whether you have very specific people in mind, whether they are work associates or family members, whether you have a general interest or a specific interest, my hope is that after spending a little bit of time together today, that we all might grow in our ability to communicate, influence others, and be influenced others through meaningful conversations and through this time together today. And so let's begin this journey into talking about these matters by looking at the nature and need for contextualization in faith and science conversations. And so what do I mean by contextualization? Well, contextualization is a very broad term. To give a picture of just how broad it is, I'd like to read this definition. It involves efforts of formulating, presenting, and practicing the Christian faith in such a way that it is relevant to the cultural context of the target group in terms of conceptualization, expression, and application, yet maintaining theological coherence, biblical integrity, and theoretical consistency. Well, I'm going to use the term a little bit idiosyncratically, and I'm going to distill it down for our purposes today. I'll be speaking of contextualization as appropriately packaging a message during a conversation so that it can be heard from someone who has a different ethos than you and I do, or you do anyway, if you're having that conversation. And of course, the whole process of contextualization is much, much broader than simply having conversations, but that process of contextualization has strong implications in our conversation. And so I'd like to first off give you more information if anybody would like to drill down and find out that wider understanding of what contextualization and syncretism, which is a word we'll come to in a moment, mean. But to give a more concrete example, I would like to ask for a volunteer. Anybody volunteer? Somebody within throwing range. That counts you out, unfortunately.
I got a volunteer.
All right. All right, well, we'll do it. I'm not sure how, but we'll do it. And so in any conversation, this will be very, very simple. It will be elementary. In any conversation, you have to have two people. You're a person, I assume.
Yeah.
I'm a person, I assume. And a message, and this is our message. And so let's make this conversation a little bit more interesting. And let's say that my interlocutor is from a very different background, and even some of the forms and symbols in his conversation, his ways of being, are very different than mine. And so I want him to understand our conversation. I want him to understand what I'm trying to say to him. And so I get really excited and I work really hard to get that message to him and meet his culture, but I overshoot it in all the work that I do, and my message gets lost in trying to give it to him. And somebody at the Colorado School of Mines can do that. I actually have a better message here, if we don't have to find that one. But we did. Okay, good. And so it's possible to so identify, and we've had those conversations where you say, yeah, uh-huh, okay, yeah, uh-huh, and we talk. But that message that we want to send is lost because we've so identified with that other culture. Well, we may realize the danger of that, and we may say, well, we want our message to get through, by golly. And so we're going to tell that person our message, and we're going to say it the way that is really clear. And so we don't sufficiently address their worldview, their ethos, where they're coming from. Again, this is all really simple stuff. I realize that, but this is about contextualization. And so in doing that, either by so identifying with their ethos that our message is lost, or so identifying with our own ethos that our message is lost, then our message gets mixed in unhelpfully with another culture, with something else that dilutes its ability to be heard. And that's called syncretism. And obviously, again, syncretism is a much broader term. I'm using it idiosyncratically as I am using the word contextualization. However, if we will work to retain our message and understand the ethos that our interlocutor is working in, then send that message in such a way that it actually can get there, then we have been successful in contextualizing that message to the other person. So what I'm suggesting is a contextualized conversation regarding matters of faith and science neither confirms the other person's point of view without involving a message, nor does it disregard that point of view in something of an imperialistic way of syncretizing the message, but instead it communicates the message within that point of view. Well, that all sounds simple enough, doesn't it? That's elementary school stuff. And yet when we look at the conversations that go on around us and those that we conduct ourselves, we realize that while the concept is simple, many times the execution is poorly done. And so, while we may regard that premise as self-apparent, if we wish to hold meaningful conversations on faith and science, then we must take direct responsibility for contextualizing our messages to those who are in different ethoses, different worldviews, different groups, however we define that. And without an adequate level of contextualization, our message is going to be lost on that person. And this is true both of those who wish to cross cultural boundaries to share their religious beliefs and those who want to have conversations on these very complex and interesting and yet difficult topics on faith and science as well, in my experience. Now, again, although all of that may seem simple enough, I'm going to one-up the simplicity of that and say that we cannot have a contextualized conversation with a person or a ethos and culture that we don't know. That seems pretty self-explanatory too. However, think about it. How many people try to approach science having read a science textbook, but not having a relationship with a living and working scientist? That would be a little bit like saying you understood Roman Catholicism because you knew the words to the Latin Mass, but you'd never met a priest or someone from the laity who was in the pews of a Roman Catholic church. I'd like to suggest today that relationship is the key to contextualized conversation, and not relationship with concepts, relationship with people. Because even if we have previously held a view that someone else currently holds, even if we've been a part of that ethos in the past, if we have left that ethos, if we have left that world, and we are no longer connected to living participants in it, then I would like to suggest that we are no longer connected to that world in a way that we can, as effectively at least, contextualize in our conversations with people in that world. Again, I served at Dozer on the Science for Seminaries project, and that project brought scientists and theological professors, theological faculty together with the intent of providing core curricula in the seminary environment, and I think I had that on there. So this was something I actually stole from an old PowerPoint. I don't know that I'm allowed to use it. I'm probably not.
No.
And it's not in my scoured PowerPoint for the powers that be. But anyway, fabulous project. And what we were looking to produce in that project were these core curricula courses and courses that could be shared. And yet one of the most powerful, if not the most powerful things that happened was the relationships that blossomed in that project. And I won't read these to you even though I'd intended to. I will tell you instead a story of one of the last seminary faculty meetings that I was privileged to be a part of. The seminary faculty were there. The scientists were there who were advising the seminary faculty. And as they were talking excitedly and engagedly with one another, what they said was this. You know, the funding is what brought us together. And we've done the work that was expected. And yet, really the most valuable thing is this friendship that I've got now, this relationship. And what we did was we brought scientists and seminary faculties from a wide variety of places on both counts together. And what we discovered is as these faculty, as these scientists came together, the relationships became exciting to them, became energizing, and they began working with one another to have these sorts of contextualized conversations through the media of a curriculum that went into many sorts of theological settings that resulted as an end goal of that project. And so the thing that happened with this project was not only that I'm wanting to make sure that I haven't missed a slide advance. My apologies. So the thing that happened, I didn't, was that we created these spaces, and we didn't know we were even doing this, where relationships could blossom. And within the space of those relationships, unexpected outcomes began to be generated, and new and exciting directions happened through the power of these friendships. Another example, we had one science advisor in the project who shared no background with his very, very, very conservative seminary faculty, aside that he had grown up in a conservative theological circle himself. And yet, their relationship was such that by the end of the project, he had been asked to come as a central and significant portion of the faculty's annual opening to the year's programming, their faculty retreat. And so here you had a scientist who was not a secular scientist by any means, but a scientist who held radically different views than that both of the professors and the society, the seminary that he was in, and yet he was asked to do this. And so these relationships create space. And so we need to contextualize. We need to contextualize in the place of relationship. And let me give you some practical steps for doing just that. First off, we need to have a willingness to interact with others who are often avoided by our group. In other words, we need to be a little bit of a missionary. We need to step out of our group if we are to engage in these kinds of conversations. One time, I was at the Smithsonian Museum of Natural History with a minister friend. I wanted to go in the Hall of Human Origins. They looked at me. They said, I'm not going in there. I don't believe that stuff. Well, how can we have a conversation if we don't go in there where those people are, or if those people, whoever they are, don't come out to us? We must be willing to interact with others to walk into the places, if you will, that are often avoided by our peer group if we are to have these sorts of conversations. And then when we do that, secondly, if we wish to engage people in a meaningful way, we need to be willing to do more than simply spending time. We need to invest in building relationships. I will never forget, I was on Facebook not too long in the past, and I had a friend of mine. He had been a youth in one of my youth groups. I had visited him in the hospital when he had motorcycle accidents. He was a friend. And what I discovered, he posted, I even think he tagged me, that he had decided that the world was flat and that NASA had faked the moon missions. And he was very publicly coming out of the closet about his beliefs and tagged me in the process. And I thought, you've got to be kidding me. I thought, you're out of your mind. And I got angry. I wanted to defriend this guy. And I wanted to say, how can you be that stupid? But you know, he's not stupid, and he's my friend. And so after some prayer, because I am a pastor after all, I wrote him back, and what I said is look, I see that you believe that the world is flat. I disagree with you, but I've always valued our conversations. I've always valued your opinion in the past. Will you tell me how you got that, how you came to that idea? And so now we've got to play out whatever that is, as long as he stays in relationship with me. And you know, the thing about it is, I may learn something from him as I go through that. As a matter of fact, he just posted something on the wires in the space station, but I don't think I'll learn something about that. But I think I'll learn something about some deeper issues. And that brings me to the third step. I'm currently leading a group in the church through a study called Emotionally Healthy Spirituality. And I think that one of the best advice to group leaders that I've ever seen was written in that by Peter Scazzaro. And what he said is, turn to wonder. And we love talking about wonder in these issues of faith and science, but he means a different kind of wonder. What he says is, if you feel judgmental or defensive when someone else is sharing, ask yourself, I wonder what brought him or her to that belief. I wonder what he or she is feeling. And here's a good one. I wonder what my reaction teaches me about myself. And so if we will do this, if we will walk through this process, then I like to suggest that it will build trust. And trust will build relationship. And relationship will lead to contextualized interchanges between us and the other person. And those interchanges will build meaningful conversations. And meaningful conversations may very well bring transformation. I'm going to skip over the summary for time and try to run through a conclusion really quickly because I think it's important. Because when we're able to communicate with one another and hear those contextualized messages in circles of relationship, then the possibility of transformation opens. But more than the possibility of transformation, we might just get the opportunity to talk about some of those really cool, interesting questions that brought us to this whole field in the first place. Questions about the nature of humanity, the nature of God, the nature of reality, what is admissible as knowledge, in what ways God has and does act in the world, and how our spiritual experiences shape who we are today and how we view the world. And if we can connect with others at that level, then I believe that we will have very meaningful conversations indeed. Thank you very much. Yes, sir.
Just an observation. You know, I think you used the word pretty far into the presentation, but I really couldn't help but thinking as you were going through it from the training that I had, I'm like, this is missions. You know, this is, you know, contextualization, really framing it. It really makes me think about in my interactions with other people, you know, how right. Do I to look at it as a mission?
Right. When I did my master's degree in missions, I'd never been out of the country. I just knew that I was supposed to do it. And when I finished my master's degree in missions, I have not become a missionary. I've been a pastor. I think I've been a different pastor. But I certainly would never have been staring in the windows at Dozer if I had not been encouraged by the incredible ideas and desire to be able to share those ideas across cultures and across those things that separate us. Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
One of the points that you made about going to where the individuals are that you're trying to talk to.
Yes.
Meeting them where they are.
Yes.
I think the challenge is that we're viewed, scientists, overall science, is viewed with such skepticism that makes it really difficult to get an inroad to develop that relationship that you're talking about.
Right.
Do you have any advice on how...
I'm glad you asked. This kind of material is non-threatening. I gave a presentation. I am in a very rural area. I had a daughter attend a Christian school that the big field trip of the year was going to the Ark Encounter. They spent a week. And so I asked if I might speak to the class. I've been a part of the AAAS, et cetera, et cetera. I saved it till the end of school when things were not, you know, exciting and there were openings. And what I talked about with them, I said, here's what I want to talk about with you. How to talk to scientists about what you believe. And so I just simply shared about contextualization. I threw pieces of paper. I talked about missionaries going to Hugadubungdu and how they need to cross cultures. And you believe these things. And I didn't say it in those terms, but I said that this is the belief system, and you want to share that with scientists. Well, do you know any scientists? Why don't you go meet some scientists? Why don't you engage in relationship? And so it was really the same talk I just gave today, looking at it from another direction. And interestingly, what often happens, and I think is the least valuable piece of any conversation we can have in this matter, is everybody wants to know which pigeonhole you fit in, so they then know how to address you. And so I worked that entire talk through, and then the teacher asked me, basically, she was very nice, and she wasn't at all confrontational. Basically, she says, well, what do you believe? And so what I said was, well, I don't want to talk about that, because I want to talk about the deeper questions that get stopped by that. I want to talk about why you believe the Bible the way you do. I want to talk about revelation. I want to talk about God's sovereignty. I want to talk about causality. Is it primary or is it secondary? I want to get to these real questions that we're hiding behind when we're pigeonholing somebody, and I want to have a real dialogue. And that's where we left it, and I believe that we can have that dialogue. And interestingly, I do understand young earth creationism very well. I grew up wanting to be a paleontologist. When I became a Christian, I was became a Christian in very, very fundamental circles, and got a hold of Henry Morris's textbook on young earth creationism, and my whole world changed overnight. I understand that, but what I didn't understand was what this teacher was able to share with me, and that was how betrayed she felt when she learned, quote unquote, the truth about young earth creationism. And so without a relationship, there's really a lot more interesting questions there do you believe what I believe, and can we affirm one another?
What do you mean she was betrayed? What?
She had a feeling that her teachers in school had betrayed her by not teaching young earth creationism because it was the truth. And if she had been taught the truth, she had the sense was that she had lost something valuable in this false education that she had received. And yes.
So if you wanted to go to these bigger issues, isn't that a way of skirting? I mean, did you ever tell her what you think?
No, but I've got a follow-up conversation just hanging in the air. She was my kid's teacher, and I can say, hey, this wasn't appropriate in front of your class, but let's sit down and talk about it. And let's do that one of these times.
And what do you tell your child then when they go on?
My wonderful daughter had to write a paper about some element of these matters, and she wrote about how the dinosaurs were on the ark, and she did it as a tongue-in-cheek piece that got her very good grades, and yet she knew it was a tongue-in-cheek piece, and we discuss it. And so there are other issues that lead us into educational choices than simply the viewpoint on creation in the school. And that's what led us there. I have another daughter in public schools, another daughter and son, but this was just the right choice of the options that I had. I will say that when I was in D.C., we were in an amazing Christian school that would have been very good with having any sort of dialogue at all in the classroom, and I'll just leave it open that way.
So I think all three of our speakers did a wonderful job. It's kind of demonstrating in their own circle of influence that science literacy is really about engagement and relationship. So if we can thank Walter and the other two speakers.